From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made in January 2016, when New York State is at least supposed to come online with medical marijuana. But there are obviously going to be some limitations. There are questions about implementation, etc. And tonight, there's a community forum at Monroe Community College all about medical cannabis, the politics, the science, and the truth of it. They've got panel participants from across the state, from the medical community, from state lawmaking community, all kinds of folks who are going to be there. We're going to be talking about who is going to be involved with that panel coming up. We've got two of the panelists with us in studio for the hour, and we're going to be trying to answer your questions on what New York State is doing next when it comes to medical marijuana and why some are pushing the state to act a little bit more quickly. In studio for the hour, we have Dr. Luke Pepone, who is an assistant professor at the Wilmot Cancer Institute and who happens to do a lot of plant-based research. I think that's fair to say, Dr. Pepone.
Definitely fair to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. We're always careful about technical titles and then just, what do you really do?
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, so that explains it well.
All right. And Dr. Julie Netherland is here. She is with the Compassionate Care New York and Drug Policy Alliance. Dr. Netherland, we spoke to you on the phone earlier this year. Nice to see you in studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you came up from New York City?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you for being here again. The forum tonight, 7 p.m., at the Monroe Community College Little Theater Building 4. There is free admission. And again, if you want to get involved tonight, it's at 7 o'clock. There's going to be free parking out there. And if you have any questions, you can call the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester at 473-8177, 585-473-8177. They've moved it to MCC because they expect a lot of community questions and interest about general questions about medical marijuana and then about some of the mechanisms in place and what's not in place. So let me just start with some broad questions, and then we'll get into a lot of the specifics. I'll start with Dr. Pepone. What are your most pressing questions you have going forward, or what are you getting asked most often about the way this is supposed to work in New York State?
The most pressing questions is, are they going to be able to roll it out faster? Because we know that we do have some pediatric patients that have passed away that perhaps could be preventable. So we're looking to perhaps accelerate the timeline a little bit. And also a little bit more specific knowledge on what products they're going to roll out. We have the unique restriction that smoking the plant is not allowed. So I would like to see what kind of product they're going to make available to the patients to see what that may help with, what it might be lacking, and what products we can fit towards certain people.
Before I ask Dr. Netherland the same question, you mentioned pediatric patients. We're going to talk about some specific cases. But there are those who have been against medical marijuana saying you're not going to save lives. This is palliative. And that may be a red herring. What do you think, Dr. Pepone?
Well, I fully agree that the promise is in the palliative setting. It's there to I believe the full potential of this drug is in the treatment of side effects and toxicities from other treatment, cancer therapies, HIV and AIDS therapies. They often cause severe side effects. And I think the promise of medical cannabis is in treating some of those symptoms and side effects. As for the side of saving lives, we don't know exactly what medical cannabis can do in those terms yet. And hopefully we can continue to study this and shed light on it. I know that there's laboratory and animal studies showing that certain compounds from cannabis do fight cancer itself. So that may be something that comes down the road later as we continue to research.
Okay. It's not a promise. It's a question of possibility with more testing.
Correct. And we have the preliminary evidence. We have the studies in the cell cultures in the lab, okay, and the animal studies. And next is to continue to move it down the pipeline.
Dr. Netherland, your biggest questions and the questions you get at the Compassionate Care New York and Drug Policy Alliance about this.
Well, we get a lot of calls every day about this since the bill was signed into law. I would agree that the number one question we're getting right now is really around this issue of emergency or expedited access for those patients for whom the timeline for implementation is simply too long and are really risking their lives every day they have to wait to get hold of the medicine. Beyond that, there's just a lot of questions about what the program's going to look like. The way the law ended up looking, it gives a lot of discretion to the health commissioner in terms of the sort of parameters of the program. And so we get a lot of questions about, exactly who's going to be covered, you know, when's the rollout going to be, what are the dispensaries going to look like, what are the products that are going to be available. So just a lot of questions about the nitty-gritty details of implementation.
Okay, so that gives us sort of an outline of what we're looking at with medical marijuana in the state. If you want to join the conversation, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can join the conversation on Twitter, at Evan Dawson. Dr. Luke Papone and Dr. Julie Netherland here. They're going to be part of the community forum tonight at 7 p.m., at Monroe Community College on this issue. So if you have any questions or comments or want to weigh in on what New York State is doing or not doing, that's the best way to do it. When Dr. Papone was here last, we talked about the research aspect. And one of your comments was that, very candidly, you wanted to see New York State moving forward say, if we're going to do this, we're going to also allow researchers access to understand what we're actually, what is actually improving and what's helping and not, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we had, after that, I had Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli in studio. And what I want to do is I want to play a couple of minutes from Mr. Morelli's appearance because I think that will also help inform our discussion right now.
Sure.
We talked about, in that conversation with Joe Morelli, we talked about the fact that Mr. Morelli was saying, hey, New York State just passed an anti-heroin bill, and the governor was concerned that if you also at the same time pass a medical marijuana bill, the optics don't look very good, and New York State can't be against heroin, but there are some concerns about marijuana, and so they're trying to split the difference here when it comes to smoking being allowed versus not, when it comes to research, when it comes to all of these things. So let's listen to what Joe Morelli said, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
There are a number of people in the medical community who still have pretty mixed feelings about smoking marijuana and what it does to your respiratory system. You know, we've done this big public campaign about getting people not to smoke cigarettes. Not all of those negative effects of smoking cigarettes apply to marijuana, but many of them do. It does have an impact on your respiratory system. So I think we were just concerned. And there, it seems to be pretty strong evidence that the vaporization or oils can get into the bloodstream nearly as fast, in some case vapors, they say, as fast.
Well, a couple of things on this. First of all, chemo kills a lot of healthy tissue, right?
That's true. There's no question.
I mean, there are certain treatments that we have that are not perfect.
Correct.
We had on Monday on this program, we had Dr. Luke Papone, who is from the Wilmot Cancer Institute. I want to listen to some of what Dr. Papone said. So this is Dr. Luke Papone talking about his concerns about what he views as the state passing medical marijuana but limiting research. He wants more research done. Let's listen to what Dr. Papone said about that.
Even though the state has made it legal, we still can't research it unless we get marijuana from the federal government. You cannot use the state's supply. I want to see the state help us to navigate this very treacherous research process.
What do you make of that?
Well, I make of it, I understand a researcher's desire to have more dollars from the state of New York go towards it. But obviously we have a lot of requests for money and a lot of needs that are being unmet as it is. And look, you know, this is not a therapy to cure any illness. It is, and, you know, I have family members who are taking chemo right now, so I know the effects of this
sure.
is very, very significant and important. This is a way to limit the negative impacts of chemo. I'm not underestimating
it's
that
palliative.
To any degree. Right. It's palliative care. And so most of our research dollars, and I spent a lot of effort, and we were successful in increasing research dollars to spinal cord injury, et cetera. You know, the federal government really does have more responsibility for research than the state. Our resources are much more limited. So I understand his point of view, but I think it's probably not likely that we would change this, certainly in the near future.
All right, that's Assemblyman Joe Morelli addressing a number of points there, and I want to kind of hit them one by one. Number one, he said his initial point, Dr. Papone, was that there are plenty of doctors concerned about the smoking of marijuana medicinally.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a valid concern. I think if they demonstrate to us that they can produce an extract that has the components that we know are good actors in that oil, I think there'll be less resistance to that. But there's also ways that the patient can vaporize the plant on their own. You know, we don't have to go through this extra step. And it would be the exact same process as they're doing. I think it just comes down to, you know, the government wanting to oversee this, you know, they're having a very strict oversight role.
On that note, out of the 24 states have legalized medical marijuana?
23.
How many do not allow smoking?
As far as I know, the only other state would be Minnesota.
So Minnesota and New York are the only in the country that if you allow medical marijuana, you can't smoke it. Dr. Pepone, medically, is there a big difference between smoking marijuana and then ingesting oils and others derived from the plant?
100%. There's a huge difference. The mode of delivery, first of all, the substances in marijuana, specifically even THC, very poorly soluble in water, which is what mostly runs through our body. So the absorption through the intestinal system is very poor when compared to the smoking of it or even the vaporization of oils. The best way to get marijuana into your system is through the lungs and not through the gut, unfortunately. But there are safer ways we can get it through the lung. And also think about chemotherapy patients that are extremely nauseated. You're going to ask them to eat something and then also wait up to 90 minutes. Neither of those are very likely. We've had problems with that before in other studies. And getting nauseated patients to eat something, keep it down, and wait 90 minutes for it to pass is, you know, really not acceptable to the patient, they'll tell you.
Dr. Netherland, your thoughts on before we even get to the research, your thoughts on Assemblyman Morelli saying that oils and other forms of delivery are more acceptable than smoking?
Well, I have to agree with Dr. Pepone here. I think, you know, the law that was passed does prohibit smoking, but there remains the question of whether the whole plant will be available for people to vaporize. And it's certainly something that we know, the patients that we talk to, want to have that option. A lot of them are concerned that the oils and concentrates will be too potent. They're concerned about what byproducts might be in those, and they want to go sort of with the natural whole plant. The other concern about the elimination of smoking from the bill is really one about patient access and cost. Aside from being an easy mode of administration and one that patients can easily titrate their dose, it's also probably the most affordable. And so given that that is not an option for patients in New York, I think it's incumbent upon the Department of Health and the industry groups that are going to be selling these products to make sure that low-income patients have access both to the products, that they're affordable, as well as the vaporizers, which can be quite costly.
If you have questions or comments, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, Dr. Pepone, on the research side, he addressed your point specifically saying, look, you got to look to the federal government. It's the state's got a lot of requests. It's just probably not going to happen.
Now, I understand the points that he made, and I agree with him. The federal government is the primary funder. But if you listen to my quote, I wasn't actually, you know, looking for money. I'm looking for administrative support, support from the state Department of Health to help us get an IND with the Federal Drug Administration. I think they can help us do that because they're already in process of that. I was looking towards that. And another one of Assemblyman Morelli's comments was that, well, these studies aren't curative. They're for palliative, okay? So I've had this problem before, and I say to people, well, just because a study is not looking at saving your life, it's not important. What we've done here in the United States is we have extended life expectancy, and we've done it very well. But a lot of people tell you those years at the end aren't very happy years. We've done a great job of letting people live longer. Now it's time to let them live well longer. Let's not just keep extending years and give you years at the end that you're can't walk, you can't care for yourself. Let's give these years where you live a healthy and full life up and close to the end as you can.
On Twitter, I heard from Jake, and Jake sent for our consideration an article that I had not seen. And the title of the article is Study Finds Fewer Overdose Deaths in Medical Marijuana States. And I'm curious to know if our panel's heard about it. I want to read a portion of this article. And it comes, let's see here, it says, during the time period reviewed for this study between 1999 and 2010, 13 states had laws allowing for medical marijuana use. Since then, 10 more states and the District of Columbia have legalized it. Quote, in absolute terms, states with a medical marijuana law had about 1,700 fewer opioid painkiller overdose deaths in 2010 than would be expected based on trends before the laws were passed. The lead author of the study cautioned that this is not a ringing endorsement of legalizing pot, just another piece of evidence as we talk about possible impacts. Julie, have we heard of this before? Is this an issue you've heard about?
Yeah, this study is just came out. It's relatively new. It appeared in JAMA. Fairly reputable medical journal, I think we can agree.
Very reputable.
It's very interesting results. Now, obviously, correlation is not causation, but I do think this is really interesting, a really interesting finding. And we know that medical marijuana has analgesic properties. We know that there's a huge problem with pain in this country and a huge problem with the use and then addiction to opioid pain medication. So I think it's a very interesting article. I'm interested to see more research in this vein. And I will say here in New York, the New York Academy of Medicine supported the legislation in New York in part because they felt that it had the potential to help address the opioid overdose crisis here in our state.
So again, correlation not being causation, but if there's causation between a state that has a medical marijuana law in place and a decrease in opioid addiction and overdosing, again, it's just because of what is available and treatment options and treatment decisions, yes?
That's correct. And what we know is that while opioids have a high rate of overdose, no one has ever had a fatal overdose from cannabis. It's a relatively safe medication, especially when you compare it to some of these more toxic pharmaceutical treatments.
And let me read again one more stat from there. In states where medical marijuana is legal, 25% fewer people die from prescription drug overdoses than in states where it's not. Dr. Pappone, again, correlation, not causation, but your take on that.
Yeah, I also read this study. It's a very well-done study. And from a research perspective, this is what's called an ecologic study. You're just looking at correlations. And if you take a past example, we looked at a map of the United States and we overlaid breast cancer mortality onto it, and we saw that the sunshine levels matched up almost perfectly with the breast cancer death rate throughout the United States. And people said, well, why is sunshine saving people from dying from breast cancer? Well, people figured out it was vitamin D. So that sets the stage to do further detailed studies with individuals' data on vitamin D and breast cancer. And what we found for the most part has showed that, vitamin D, higher vitamin D levels, women have lower rates of breast cancer, lower rates of breast cancer mortality. So this is setting the stage. This is showing the first of a set of studies, hopefully we do. Hey, this could be pointing towards less opioid use.
All right. I have a comment, actually in an email from a listener named Mark saying, couldn't get through by phone. I don't know if there's – I think everything should be working, but if there's any trouble that you feel like you can't get through on the phone, you can take the conversation online if you like. Again, it's at Evan Dawson on Twitter, or you can email me, edawson@wxxi.org. And John, our intrepid engineer, is checking the phone lines, and he's giving me the thumbs up now. I think we should be okay.
Did we forget to pay the bill?
I don't think so. Not that I know of. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Your comments or questions on medical marijuana. And again, we're leading up to a community forum tonight sponsored by the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester. It's at Monroe Community College on medical cannabis. They're talking about politics, science, and truth. On the panel are our two guests in studio today, Dr. Julie Netherland from Compassionate Care NY and Dr. Luke Pappone from the University of Rochester Medical Center. He's at the Wilmot Cancer Center. And he is a regular plant-based drug researcher. Other people participating on the panel include Senator Ted O'Brien, who was on the program yesterday, who agrees that there are parts of the law that he thinks could be expedited. Senator Joe Robach from New York's 56th Senate District there. And Marianne Sargent, Holly Anderson, is going to moderate. She's the executive director of the Breast Cancer Coalition, and they have another number of other panel participants as well. So that's 7 p.m. tonight at Monroe Community College. It is free, and if you need more information, you can call the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester. So let's talk about timeline now. So what has to be done infrastructurally? Julie, realistically, if the state said, okay, we're listening, we're going to expedite some of the process, but you couldn't snap your fingers and do it overnight, could you? What needs to get done for this to be expedited?
Well, there are different avenues to expedite access, and all of them have different challenges and advantages, I would say. So, for instance, when we're focused on particularly the kids with these severe forms of epilepsy, one avenue may be to try to expand access to a medication called Epidiolex that's produced by GW Pharmaceuticals. It's currently in clinical trials. So that's one avenue. And what would be involved in that is trying to get the appropriate protocols and approvals in place and getting the pharmaceutical company to agree to make that medicine available. If we're talking about fast-tracking production in New York State, there was, in earlier versions of the bill, provisions to create what was then called an expedited system of access that would basically allow the Department of Health to fast-track a producer. And rather than go through all the sort of long-term process of setting up the procedures for licensing and application and registration that are outlined in the law, that they would be able to look at one or more producers and make a decision quickly about letting them go forward and get plants in the ground as soon as they can and try to get medicine to these desperately ill children in particular within at least, 3 to 6 months, as opposed to the 18 months or longer that the bill outlines, that the law outlines for the implementation of the full program.
And so, by the way, Julia, every time we talk about young children with needs that may involve medical cannabis on this program, we have questions about delivery systems. So again, even if smoking were allowed, you probably wouldn't have a 3-year-old smoking it. So what would be a delivery system?
Right. So the only delivery I've heard of for kids, the pediatric patients, is really through oils. Mm-hmm. So it's ingested. It's often, it can either be placed under the tongue or put in food. But I have not heard of anyone recommending a smoking or vaporization for pediatric patients.
And on Twitter, Carl says you can overdose on OxyContin, you can get addicted, but you can get addicted to marijuana too. And Dr. Pepone, to Carl's point there, addiction for marijuana, and I'll ask Julie the same question in a moment, concern about addiction to marijuana when it comes to medical marijuana?
You know, there's some level of concern with that, but there's really no physically addictive properties to marijuana. There's argument of whether or not you can be addicted to it. And my stance is you can be addicted to anything. You could eat McDonald's every day, and then you miss a day, and you don't feel like yourself. You feel bad. You get a headache and things like that.
Withdrawal.
Yeah. I mean, just anything. Video games, things like that. But there's no physical addiction. If you withdraw from opioids after taking a large amount and you just stop taking them, it could cause your death. And if you don't die, you'll feel like you want to die for a long time. So there's none of those physical addiction properties like alcohol has and like opioids have.
Is there also a difference medicinally in your mind in terms of the safety, because you essentially can't overdose on marijuana the way you can on opioids?
Yeah, if I was, handing out marijuana to my research participants, I'm not going to worry that they're going to go home. You know, if they go home and smoke a week's worth, I'm not going to be happy, but at the same time, I'm not going to be worried about their safety.
You may be worried about other people's safety if they're driving or traveling.
Correct. I mean, all this has to be used in a responsible fashion, just like Vicodin that your doctor hands you. You can't take 2 Vicodin and go out and drive. I mean, it's against the law. It falls under DUI. Just because it's a prescription doesn't mean you can go out and operate a vehicle or other things like that.
Julie, on Twitter, Carl, again, talking about concerns about addiction. What do you tell people when they ask about addiction and your thoughts on this issue, how it's outlined with the state medical marijuana program?
Well, I think with any medication, you need to weigh the risks and the benefits. And I would certainly not say that medical marijuana is completely risk-free. I agree with Dr. Pepone that the risk of addiction from medical cannabis is somewhat in dispute, but that's not to say people can't have problems. One of the things that's great about having a legal medical marijuana program is that this will be overseen by physicians who can help assess those kinds of issues. As long as people are purchasing medical cannabis on the illicit market, there's no way for them to get the sort of guidance and help if they do begin to have a problem with it. But certainly, compared to other pharmaceuticals, I think it's, again, relatively safe, which is not to say it has no risks, but that we need to weigh the risk and benefits for each individual patient.
Lori is asking online, I thought I heard that they won't produce nearly enough medical marijuana for everyone in the state who would need it or every hospital that would want it. Is that right or wrong?
Well, I don't think we know the answer to that. I think probably what she's referring to
dispensaries?
is in the law itself. There's the state is authorized to license five producers, growers, that can each operate four dispensaries. So that's a total of 20 dispensaries for the entire state of New York. Now, obviously, it's a populous state. It's a geographically large state. And there are, I think, legitimate concerns that that's not going to be sufficient to meet patient need. And I will say, and this is where the authority and the discretion of the commissioner comes in, that there's a provision in the law that the commissioner can choose to add producers, and again, dispensaries, based on patient need. So I don't think we know the answer yet, whether that's going to be sufficient or adequate to meet the need in New York. But I certainly understand the concern, given the limited number that they're starting with.
Governor Cuomo has been somewhat scarce with media in the last several weeks, and we hope that changes, certainly before the election. And he's had an open invitation to come on this program anytime he would like. Hasn't chosen to do that as yet, but again, we hope that does change it. Just about every time I've heard him talk about this issue, he talks about it, and Dr. Pappone heard me ask about this before, but again, every time I hear Governor Cuomo, he says marijuana is a gateway drug. So Dr. Pappone, one more time, let's do this again. What does the evidence say?
The evidence says that marijuana, cannabis, is not a gateway drug. Is it a gateway in the fact that it is usually the first illicit drug that people use in a series of drugs? Yes. But preceding that is alcohol and tobacco. You see that hard drug users. So the argument is made that alcohol and tobacco are gateway drugs. But when you think of a gateway drug, does it do something to your body, your biology, that causes you to crave a harder drug? And the answer for cannabis is no. So in the technical scientific term of a gateway drug, something that primes you or causes you to want something more, cannabis is not a gateway drug in that sense.
I would just add that what we know is also that the vast, vast majority of people that have tried cannabis do not go on to use harder drugs.
Right. I think that's factual, right?
Yes, yes.
It's okay to talk about facts.
Institute of Medicine panel in 1999, stated that they don't believe that cannabis is a gateway drug, and, they were well-rounded, they had the credentials to be on that, and they knew what they were talking about.
But this is sort of one of those correlation is not causation arguments too, isn't it? Most people who do hard drugs have smoked marijuana.
Sure. It's the most widely available, and that's what usually happens. But before you try marijuana, chances are you're going to try cigarettes and you're going to try alcohol at ages before they're legal for you. So that's essentially using an illicit substance. That's their step into this realm. Is getting a cigarette at 12, a drink at 13, 14, and then progressing through that. But those things don't cause you to want cocaine, heroin, things of that nature. They're just usually in a step.
We're going to take the shortest break in radio, and we're going to come back and talk more with Dr. Luke Pappone, who is doing a lot of plant-based drug research. He works with he's an assistant professor at the Wilmot Cancer Center, the University of Rochester Medical Center. And Dr. Julie Netherland is here from Compassionate Care NY. What about some of these specific cases when we talk about kids and what we're seeing around the state? One of the reasons that a lot of people are asking the state to expedite this is because there are perception of children in need who would benefit from medical marijuana. And I know Julie has talked about that. We're going to hear more about that. So let's take the shortest break in radio and right back on the topic of medical marijuana on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Tonight, there's a community forum on medical cannabis at Monroe Community College. It's at 7 p.m. in the Little Theater Building 4 at MCC. The admission is free tonight, and they've got a panel of what looks like almost a dozen people from around the state, whether it's the medical community or state lawmakers, et cetera, who can answer your questions and talk about issues related to medical marijuana. It's sponsored by the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester. And again, 7 o'clock tonight, two of the panelists are with us in studio, Dr. Luke Pappone and Dr. Julie Netherland, talking about some of the issues related to this. And one of the issues that we've been hearing a lot about, especially as we talk about the possible expedition of this process, of speeding it up, because right now we're on track for January 2016, is that right?
That's 18 months from the date the bill was signed, or longer.
Okay, so at the earliest, January 2016, and there's a call to expedite that process. We're hearing about children. We're hearing about kids like Anna Conti. We're talking about, again, a child whose family had sought medical marijuana to treat seizures, passed away. That's a name that we've heard. We've heard other children with severe seizure disorders. Dr. Netherland, when people talk to Compassionate Care NY and the Drug Policy Alliance, when it comes to children, what specific conditions are we talking about that may be immediately benefited from medical cannabis?
Well, it's really the seizure disorders that we're hearing about. There are several different conditions that are very severe in nature, where children are having either hundreds of seizures a week or a day, sometimes really severe. And, you know, what we've come to learn in working with these families is that any one of these seizures could end the life of their child. Now, we know from states where medical cannabis is legal that children with similar disorders have taken medical cannabis, and it hasn't helped everyone, but it's helped a significant number of these children reduce either the number or the severity of their seizures. So you can imagine what it must be like to be the parent of a young child who has one of these disorders, knowing that there's a medicine that may help your child, may in fact save the life of your child, but you can't get access to it because it's not available in the state where you live. That's really the urgency and what's propelling this demand for emergency access. If we can save one life, we have an obligation to do everything we possibly can to get medicine into the hands of these kids who might benefit from it.
And I have an email from Dave, and I'm going to try to condense and read a bit of it because it's exactly on this topic. Dave is saying, I would like to challenge the researchers' notion that marijuana could save lives. We were never promised that when the debate was so hot earlier this year. It sounds a lot like Parkinson's and stem cell research, all the promises we've heard, but we haven't seen anything come to fruition. Dr. Pappone?
Yeah, I mean, we're a long way off from saving lives. But when we talk about the pediatric spot, then we may be closer than we think. But in terms of, you know, medical cannabis being used for treatment in cancer or other diseases that are chronic and can cause your death, we're a long way off from that.
Yeah, you're not making a promise.
I'm not promising anything.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have the early studies that show promise, but a lot of early studies show promise and then turn out to be nothing. I mean, that could be the case, or this could go on to develop something that is promising down the line. We just don't know. We're just asking for the chance to research it and give the public the answer.
All right. And so to build off Dave's email here, let's talk specifically about some of the ways medical cannabis helps different things. We've talked about pain and nausea. Is that right?
Correct.
Pain and nausea. And when it comes to a seizure, let's kind of focus on a lot of folks who would hear medical cannabis and they think palliative. They think you're in the throes of something, whether it's pain, nausea, et cetera. Marijuana delivered in some form can help alleviate symptoms. Seizures, which can kill a child, would the medical marijuana be administered prevent? And I apologize for going back over this ground, Julie, but I want to make sure we're covering it. And Dr. Pappone, would it be administered preventively or during a seizure to alleviate in the middle of a seizure? Give me a sense for that.
Well, my understanding of how it's being used in other states is that it's being given a dose is determined that's sort of a daily dose that's given to reduce the seizures overall. So it's not done in an acute crisis situation in the middle of a seizure, but rather a treatment that's ongoing and that over time for some children has reduced the number of seizures that they have.
Dr. Pepone, is that about right?
I'm not as familiar with how they treat the seizures, but what Dr. Netherland said sounds about right to me. And that follows the pattern of what we follow in cancer patients, is that a lot of these things have to be administered before you see the symptom or side effect, or else it's too late. I know that my boss was one of six people who worked on the original antiemetics for the cancer patients, the drugs that will stop you from throwing up. They administered them all after they threw up, and it didn't do anything. And they were all very disappointed, but they went back. Someone sat down and said, well, what if we gave it to them before they threw up? And everyone else in the room said, you're crazy, but we'll give it a shot. Lo and behold, that's the standard of care now.
Okay, so I was going to ask how well it does work with pain, and is it a case with pain and nausea that every person's different? I mean, not every medicine works the exact same for everybody, Dr. Pepone?
Oh, definitely true in that. But remember that, you know, we have to tell our patients, once you start experiencing pain or once you're nauseous, it's oftentimes too late for us to do anything with rescue medications that can only do so much. You have to tell the patients, you feel fine now, but you have to take this now in order to prevent this down the line.
All right, so I'm worried that Mark's email is correct and that even though John is our excellent engineer and I know, look at John behind the glass looking at me going, I didn't do anything. I'm now convinced based on 2 hours of show today that there is something funky with our phone lines. But if you want to try to get through, I'll give you the number again. And I'm glad we're getting a lot of online comments because Brian has a comment I want to read in just a second. Let me give you the number again, though. Defunct or not, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Brian writes that he thinks it's a joke that we're even saying that New York State will have medical marijuana. If you can't smoke it like the rest of the country is allowing in hospitals, what is the point? And what are we going to say if this fails? Okay, it's a strong comment. But his premise is that we shouldn't even say we have medical marijuana because we don't have it in the way that other states are doing and that a lot of doctors would want to do. Dr. Netherland, I'll start with you. It's a strong comment. What do you make of it?
Well, listen, there's certainly a lot of disappointment, I think, on the behalf of some people that it's not available in a form that's smokable. There's disappointment about other aspects of the law as well, like conditions that weren't included. And so this is certainly a narrower law than what we had started out with. Having said that, I still think it has the potential to help thousands of really sick New Yorkers and that we need to work very diligently to make sure it's implemented swiftly and effectively and that it we create a robust system with as broad of patient access as allowed and that we work with the Cuomo administration, who, again, has a lot of authority over the shape of this program, to make sure it is a robust program. I don't think that's going to happen without people speaking up and experts weighing in. I think it's really incumbent on all of us to work to make sure that we have the best program that we can in New York. And then there probably will be shortcomings and problems with it, and we'll need to work to fix those. But I think this is a step in the right direction. And my hope and belief is that there are thousands of patients now living with cancer and MS and epilepsy and a handful of other conditions that will finally get some relief from this medicine.
And Dr. Pepone, on the notion of if this program fails, I don't necessarily know what it means and what the metrics are for mm-hmm. success or failure.
Right.
But I think what Brian's point is, if a couple years from now we decide, well, it hasn't made much of an impact, he's saying we never really tried seriously enough in the first place. Is there a concern about that?
I mean, I think that if we find out it's not working and the answer is obviously because we're not giving people smokable forms, I really hope that the politicians will be able to recognize that and amend the bill. I mean, this is a bill. It's not written on a tablet of stone. They've said it's flexible. They've said things can be changed. So I'm hopeful that when we do run into roadblocks and things like that, and we will, it's a new program, that, hopefully the politicians will look at the evidence and, you know, make the bill the best it can be for the people of the state.
Dr. Netherland, when you look at other states that have legalized medical marijuana, and then you look at Colorado and Washington that have legalized, Washington as well, everything talks about Colorado. It's Washington, have they just not gone forward with it yet? I don't know where they are.
Washington was on a little bit of slower timeline. They just opened their first store recently, so I think that's why you heard more about Colorado.
Okay, all right. So Colorado and Washington legalizing full scale, essentially recreational marijuana. Are there lessons to learn about what's happening? Are you much more concerned with the medical side? Do you look at Colorado and Washington for any sort of instructive lessons there?
Well, I think it's important to also recognize that Colorado and Washington have medical programs. And, you know, like the advantage of New York coming so late to the medical marijuana game, being the 23rd state, is that there is actually quite a bit to learn, not just from Washington and Colorado, but states around the country about how to do this effectively, how to set up best practices. And it's that kind of information that we're really hoping the Department of Health is looking at, because we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. There are lots of things we've learned about patient education and labeling and testing and quality control, a whole range of aspects of putting together these kinds of complicated programs that I think we can draw on.
Dr. Pepone, are you following those states for any reason in terms of actual lessons for work and for us in New York State?
You know, I'm following the research side, and I follow what they've done in other states, and I think California is one that everyone brings up, and I know it was brought up during the debate that we don't want to become another California.
Explain why. Why does that come up?
Well, I think that their theory is it's just a free-for-all out there. You got a paper cut, they're going to give you marijuana out there. That's the way they do. Anything you want, you can get marijuana. But as far as I know from the research—
Some paper cuts hurt.
They are bad. Trust me, I know. But no, there's no evidence to show that adolescent use of medical marijuana use has gone up in any of those states, California included.
California included.
As far as I know, the data I've seen from, you know, even pooling it together amongst all the states that have enough data that they've been alive, you know, they've had the program alive for a few years, it hasn't really hasn't impacted adolescent use of marijuana.
Okay. And I imagine that the advocates, the Holly Andersons of the world, probably cringe when I ask about Colorado and Washington, because they've said from the beginning this is not about a Trojan horse for full-on legalization. In January, Brian Kolb, the Assembly Minority Leader on this program, said he was worried that 6, 8, 10 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, we are moving down the road toward full legalization if medical legalization happens. Now, he's since softened a little bit of that talk, saying that he thinks that the state is maybe making some appropriate first steps here. But that concern about the Trojan horse was there. And, Julie, you hear that from people, and what do you say?
Yeah, we definitely heard that up in Albany while we're lobbying to pass the bill. And what I say to that is that's a debate that needs to happen, in my opinion. But it's a different debate than the one that we're having about medical marijuana. So there are good arguments for legalization. There are obviously a lot of people that are opposed to legalization, and that's a debate we should have, and we should have it on the merits. And I imagine at some point we'll have it up in Albany. You know, right now what we're focused on is making sure that the medical bill, which was passed, is implemented and is there to help patients. So, you know, yes, we hear the Trojan horse argument, and my view on that is That's an interesting, important debate that we need to have.
But a separate debate.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Pepone?
Two totally separate issues. I see it playing in the fact that maybe down the line they'll have data from our medical marijuana program, and proponents of full legalization will show, hey, it hasn't affected rates of adolescent use. It hasn't affected, you know, people getting in car accidents and things like that. Maybe this is safe enough to regulate. So I see it sort of piggybacking, but definitely two separate issues.
All right. I think my board is all weird. I think I've got a call that I can take. Is that right, John? I can barely see anything on the board. I've been unplugging it and plugging back in. I think that we have Sean in the city. And Sean, if you've gotten through, congratulations. Thanks for calling Connections, and go ahead.
Hi, yeah. You know, I've been involved in the black market trade for quite some time. And one of the things that interests me quite a bit is how clinics are going to be opened across the state. It almost seems, and this is my big concern, that it's going to be a setup so that big pharmaceutical companies or people with a lot of money are going to be able to benefit from this, where others may not be able to get involved in the financial game that could be, you know, accompanied with, you know, medicine being dispensed.
Hang in there, Sean. Stay there. Let's get some answers from our panel as best we can. Dr. Netherland?
Well, I think you're raising a really important issue. There's a lot of questions and concerns about the industry side of the medical marijuana law that was passed. And the law does lay out some of the parameters for who can apply and what kinds of things they need to have in place in order to be considered as a producer or dispensary in the state. But the reality is a lot of it is just unknown at this point because so much of that has been left to DOH to determine what the application process is going to be and what the benchmarks that they're going to be looking for are when they grant the licenses. And again, there are only 5 licenses going to be granted, so we can imagine that it's going to be very competitive.
What do you think, Sean?
That's interesting to me. And that's what concerns me is that there are only 5 licenses. And from what I may have heard or not heard is that a lot of these licenses have already been predetermined in order to get the votes that were necessary to get this thing passed. Now, I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. But,
know anything about that, Julie?
It is a concern, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about the licenses being predetermined. It will be interesting to see what DOH comes out with in terms of the application process. I know we hear from people every day interested in getting into the industry, and at this point there hasn't been much information to pass on to them.
Do you know when that's supposed to happen?
Do you know when it's supposed to happen?
I don't. I mean, again, the law allows the Department of Health 18 months before they begin issuing the licenses. So it's hard to say when they'll start coming out with their application process and regulations around the industry.
Sean, thanks for the call. Finally get a caller through, and you never know what people are going to call in with questions on. I mean, I think he said he's been involved in the black market.
Most definitely heard that.
Okay, well,
I had follow-up questions, but we lost them.
No, that's okay. But you know what, though? I think some of those points are interesting.
Well, yeah, I think they are interesting.
Interesting to ponder, yeah.
In the fact that there's going to be 5 people licensed for a large state, that automatically gives the big guys a leg up on someone who doesn't have experience doing that. So my thought is companies that have been successful in the medical marijuana and recreational marijuana market in Colorado and Washington are going to send their people here or something like someone who's established, and they're going to be able to say we can provide that. And again, back to our point of 20 dispensaries, I think we have around 20 million people in this state. I think that's about right. I'm not sure, but that's 1 dispensary per million people.
You could probably, I mean, Julie, you're work in New York City, right? I mean, is it inconceivable that you could run 10 to 20 dispensaries in New York City alone for this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we don't quite yet know what the level of patient need is going to be. Because, again, remember, this law right now is restricted to patients with only 10 conditions. But it does seem that 20 dispensaries for the entire state of New York is way too few. And so it'll be interesting to see if the commissioner of health, who has the authority to add both producers and dispensaries, does that. What I'd like to see is the Department of Health do an analysis of what they think the patient need's going to be and then make the determination about the number of producers and dispensaries based on that, as well as geographical accessibility. Because that's the other concern, right, is that, unfortunately, we have sick people all over the state of New York. And we would hate to have someone who's severely ill have to drive, 100, 150 miles to a dispensary to get the medicine that they need.
Yeah, and on that note, when it comes to dispensaries and I mean, there's kind of the two extremes right now. You have New York State, which is pretty restrictive in terms of conditions, how many dispensaries, how are you allowed to ingest it, et cetera, and then California, which is kind of viewed as a bit of the looser extreme. But how much, Dr. Netherland, have you looked at the other states in the middle, the 20, 21, 22 other states to look at for how they're doing? I mean, is New York pretty restrictive in a lot of these ways?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting, again, about New York is that it is fairly restrictive, but it also, again, the health commissioner has authority to make it less so. So he can add conditions. He can add the dispensaries. He can approve different forms of medical marijuana to make available. So that's kind of an interesting feature of the New York
system. So we could see
the
list of conditions widen between now and January 2016 or whenever the implementation is.
Or after, even.
Or after. Okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's the sort of unique feature of New York. But, yes, there are states sort of in the middle between really restrictive. I would say New Jersey has one of the most restrictive programs to the more permissive.
Let me grab one more quick call. Got to make it quick. Jenna in Pittsford, go ahead.
getting right to the point. I mean, you know, I have one of my best friend's son has severe epilepsy. This drug is so important to helping him. The time limitation and the extraordinary time that they have to wait just for this drug to be available, the five dispensaries, is inconceivable to me, because if you think of what this may mean, if they have to drive hours just to get a drug that could limit or could limit the seizures. This child has seizures every single day. Right now, their house is out of air conditioning. That means that he could be having seizures, hundreds of seizures a day. This is the only drug at this point that could make this child healthy, able to go on swings, go on walks, go to school, be normal, be a typical child. To limit it to five dispensaries, what are they going to have to drive? 2 hours, 3 hours, 6 hours to get to a dispensary? It's unreasonable. It's unconscionable. It's not acceptable.
Jenna, thanks for the call. And Julie, real quick, you've heard that comment before.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I hear from parents all the time, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, I will say it's 20 dispensaries, but that's still insufficient. And the time piece is really critical. These kids can't wait. We need to do what we can to get medicine to them as soon as we possibly can.
Dr. Pepone, last quick word. Do you agree with that?
100%. I think we should speed things up, and hopefully tonight people will show up and get more answers as our time's out, unfortunately.
Yeah, thank you. And you're seeing some of the kinds of questions that you can have answered tonight. Any other questions you have, it is tonight. It is 7 p.m., a medical cannabis community forum sponsored by the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester. They're talking about the politics, science, and truth of it. 7 p.m. at MCC. You can call the Breast Cancer Coalition if you want more information, but it is free. Dr. Pepone, Dr. Netherland, thank you for spending an hour with us, and we'll see you tonight at 7 p.m.
Thank you, Evan.
John Andrus, so patient behind the glass with a host who does not know how to operate phones. Thank you. Thank you, John, as always, and thank you for listening. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will see you on a Thursday.